Hi, everyone. I'm Terry Hutchinson. Welcome to the Interpreter Insights podcast. For this episode, our special guest is Jonathan Stapley. He's the author of a couple of books that are in press and another one that we'll be talking about. And the discussion is going to be the temple. The mission of the Interpreter Foundation is to support the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints through scholarship. We make the latest and best scholarship available to you in podcasts, journal articles, books, seminars, films, and scripture roundtables. And we invite you to see what Interpreter has to offer at interpreterfoundation.org. So if you like the podcast, tell your friends about it. You can share it. You can subscribe anywhere you get a podcast, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Pocket Cast, or any other podcast app. Because the Interpreter Foundation is not owned or controlled by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the comments we make are our responsibility. So now I want to welcome Jonathan Stapley to the program. John, welcome to Interpreter Insights. I should say welcome back, because you've been with us before.
Thank you very much. That's right. Good to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you again. To give the listeners a little bit of a background, before we changed to the podcast format, about a year ago, Jonathan came on with us and talked about his new book published by Oxford, which has now been out about a year. It's called Holiness to the Lord, Latter-day Saint Temple Worship. And it was all about the Latter-day Saint experience, and it's published by Oxford University Press. Terrific book. Jonathan was on with me and John Gee and Kevin Christensen. And we all had some things we really liked about the book and we had a great time. So I thought I'd have Jonathan come back because he has a couple of books in press, as I mentioned. We'll get to those in a minute. But I often like to have authors on to talk about the reception of their book. After it's been about a year or two, the dust has settled. We've had Grant Hardy on a couple of times, Terrell Givens, and people who write not just for the Latter-day Saint obvious audience, but in a broader context with a publisher that doesn't specialize in Latter-day Saint literature. So, Jonathan, welcome back to the program. Tell us, how did Holiness to the Lord do? How is it doing?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. So, as an author, you spend all this time writing and working through your thoughts and getting them out on paper, and publishing takes a long time, and then the book goes out there, and you don't know what's going on for the most part, but I've been extremely gratified. So on the side of the Latter-day Saint audience, people are extremely generous. So I think the biggest feedback I've had is on the first chapter, which is the walkthrough, and people are excited about having a pattern to talk about the temple for their kids, for the people in their ward. They're saying it's a good temple prep. I think it's probably is useful for that. And I'm glad that it's resonating with our people in that way. On the scholar's side, it's still a little early to know, I think. I know that UVA and Princeton are going to use it in courses this year. Really? And I had an author meets critic event at MHA this year where Lori Maffley Kipp and John Turner and Andrea Radke Moss responded to it. And it, frankly, was a career highlight for me. Like, it was really moving to have such smart people think about something that I wrote and to think so interestingly and constructively about it and be so complimentary. It was a delight. There's things about it that I hope move the discourse, move the needle on various topics, but I think it's a little early to know what's actually going to happen there. So we'll see.
So when you talk about the walkthrough, describe for the listeners exactly what that is, because that was something that we emphasized during our previous conversation, but let's kind of review it with them before, because for me, that was actually one of the strong points of the book. And I think that people using it in a temple prep class is a very good use of that material. So tell us a little bit about what it is, where it came from, what you emphasized about that.
Okay. So in short, it's a very straightforward, and when I say explicit, I don't mean shocking. I mean just very clear and straightforward account of what it means or what it is to experience the temple, from getting your temple recommend to walking through, buying garments, getting your temple recommend, showing up, making an appointment, all the way through the initiatory, the endowment, and the sealing ceremonies. Of course, respecting the privacy conventions of the church, but just being very, very open and clear about it. And then because it's me, I throw in little bits of historical context here and there about why things are the way they are. And now the idea was to dispel the sort of mystery that surrounds the temple for outsiders. So just mm-hmm. to be very frank and say, this is what happens in here, to leave very little room for guesswork and to use language that is accessible to outsiders. So as Latter-day Saints, we have a wonderful tradition to talk that talks about the temple and that deals with the temple on Sundays, but we largely use language that is not accessible to outsiders.
Well, the other thing that you did that I especially appreciated was you used publicly available sources, most of them from the church itself.
Yeah.
And that it was surprising to me how much of the endowment is really available in places like that.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the benefit of writing
videos, those kind of things that you cite in the end notes.
Yeah, that's the benefit of writing today, right? 20 yeah. years ago, that wouldn't have been possible. So my scholarship is, and the way I talk about the temple is empowered by the church itself. It's a great time to be doing this sort of thing.
After that, what were some of the other things that you came across through the book itself as you were going through there? You had a big chapter on the race and the temple.
There's the historical chapters that go through the development of sealing and endowment of power and washing and anointings and kings and queens, priests and priestesses, and those ideas, how they... Joseph Smith revealed those from 1830 to his martyrdom in 1844. Have a chapter on change, which has resonated with a lot of folks. Because for a long time, we had statements that said, in fact, there's a widely quoted sermon by Joseph Smith that says, if you change the ordinances, all is lost. They're no longer salvific. And we, I think, without question, have taught that as a people, and it's just mistaken. It misunderstands what Joseph Smith was saying. And the reality is we're constantly changing what we do in the church and in the temple, and that's okay. And so having a chapter that explains that and gives some context to it and then goes over the major periods of change, I think has been very helpful for a lot of people. And then after that, there's thematic chapters on exaltation, race, and funeral practice. I think the exaltation and race chapters are the trickiest for people because they deal with some of the most difficult things we deal with, plural marriage and the
history.
Race restriction and, yeah. and how they intersect with the temple. And man, that's hard work to do, but I think important. And then the last chapter, I've been also gratified. Lori Maffley Kipp is a great non-Latter-day Saint scholar of our tradition. And she told me how useful that has been for her to get some perspective on our tradition. So that's kind of the whole of the mm-hmm. book.
So the funeral rites was pretty original to me. I mean, I'm pretty familiar with a lot of the historical things that you raised. I know most of the sources. When I read a scholarly book, especially about the church, I'll highlight the footnotes in the bibliography about sources I've read, sources I own, what I'm familiar with, and there's a lot of yellow in your mm-hmm. endnotes for me. But the funeral rites was very original. Tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, so for I think most of your listeners here should be aware that Latter-day Saints have a tradition of burying people that have been to the temple in their endowment robes. So in the garment and then the robes of the holy priesthood. But we haven't had a lot about that. And in fact, what's sort of surprising to many people is that while we guard the temple and the temple clothes as sacred, it's only been, you know, a few years that we've showed images of those publicly. It was a big deal when the church first published those images.
The videos Millions. That we referred to during the walkthrough we were talking about, they show the garment, they show the temple
yeah.
robes, everything.
Millions of non-Latter-day Saints have seen temple robes on the bodies of deceased at funerals. Like, that's the one place where we have showed people, we don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. But having the development of that practice, whether or not it has been public or private, how we've guarded that within our tradition between the people that have gone to the temple, who haven't, who are maybe no longer practicing or excommunicated, how we make those decisions. It's all a really important window into our tradition. And I think more than anything, it highlights... So one of the major themes of the book is this idea that Joseph Smith saw in the book of Revelation, this concourse surrounding the throne of God, of king, according to the book of Revelation, a concourse of kings and priests that were made kings and priests by the blood of the Lamb, worshiping God and singing hymns to the Lamb. And he saw in that a material heaven that was to be constructed through the temple. And I think that's an extremely important idea, because it explains why we do washings and anointings. It explains why we have temple robes that are patterned after the ancient Israelite temple priests. And it explains why we bury our dead in mm-hmm. those temple robes. It also has one of my favorite little vignettes. Laurel Thatcher Ulrich is one of our great scholars. And when she was in grad school, she befriended a woman and wrote about in an essay how she ultimately was the one to dress her in her burial robes. And it's just a really moving, poignant vignette. And
yeah, my wife has done that, and she says it's a very powerful experience. Yeah, my younger brother drowned in an accident, and so myself and my brother were able to do that with him. It was a very sweet experience for us.
Yeah,
and there's a lot to what you've written here. So you wrote a book previously in 2018 with Oxford called, mm-hmm. if I remember right, The Power of Godliness. And that yep. was more about rituals outside the temple. It didn't really emphasize the temple. So I felt this was the next step, if you would, in your presentation of these types of things. How much intersection did you feel was between the two? Or did one build on the other?
Yeah, I think very much so. So there's, I think, two things to consider. One, that first book, the subtitle is Power of Godliness, Latter-day Saint Liturgy or Mormon Liturgy and Cosmology. And so this idea that our rituals are important to understand the universe in which Latter-day Saints live and construct, with a heavy focus on priesthood. And I do have a chapter on sealings in that book.
Uh-huh.
But this idea that the way we use priesthood today isn't necessarily how we've always used that term. And in Nauvoo particularly, when Joseph Smith reveals the temple, he reveals it in terms of the priesthood. And that's a big idea that I develop in the book and that leads directly to holiness to the Lord. I called it the cosmological priesthood in that book, the first book. And I still use that term. I think it's still useful. You could say temple priesthood or priesthood uh-huh. of heaven. This idea of kings and queens, priests and priestesses. I think that first book is extremely technical and I think less accessible for your average reader. And when I went to Holiness to the Lord, I wanted it to be more accessible. So I worked hard to tone down some of the jargon and the big words. Not that, like, that sounds a little patronizing, but just to make it more readable.
Yeah.
I'm cognizant that the first book wasn't as readable. And it is. It definitely builds on that work. I also, frankly... I've written a lot. I've got a lot of articles out there, a lot of book chapters in that first book. And I keep myself sort of aloof from the narrative. And in Holiness to the Lord, I enter the narrative. Like I am a...
Yeah, I'm there. You talk about your personal experiences, your mother's, yeah. your father's, close family members. But I think it's because it's a different experience.
I think it's important. I think I'm a mature enough scholar to understand how to do it I was confident enough to be able to do it. I think it was the right time and the right place to do it. But also scholarship has changed a bit where if I can plug Joey Stewart at BYU, he's done a lot of work. He's got a podcast on family history where he's highlighted these scholars, Harvard, Yale, that are writing books that talk about their personal experiences with the subjects. And I think that's healthy. And I think it's important I'm a conspicuous Latter-day Saint narrator and I'm not ashamed of that, but I'm also quick to call a spade a spade. I think it gives me some freedom to talk about things in ways that are constructive with the audience. that I wouldn't otherwise be able to do.
But I also think that having you add that personal element, I mean, your confidence as a scholar to me is a sign that, yeah, I could dare to do this in the book where I may not have done it before. But I also think that the subject matter in particular being so personal to the individual, that it was an important addition to the type of writing that you were doing to help the reader feel the experience. Whereas the rituals, the things that you were talking about, adoption, you know, the sealing and everything in a more, I guess, almost a more of an observer type of role. Whereas here, it's a bit more participatory. And that was kind of the impression that I got from that.
Yeah, this is much like a big portion of this book is lived experience, current lived experience.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you. I appreciate that resonated.
So have you heard from readers around the country about it? Have they contacted you or reached out with personal stories about maybe how this was helpful to them or how it helped them share or inform a neighbor or a family member or just their knowledge and understanding or made them help them feel more comfortable with what was going on in the temple?
Yeah, I mean, so this book has sold probably 4 times or 5 times as many as my first book, which for a scholarly book isn't a lot. You know, it's not, you know, we're not talking a lot here. And generally people have been very, very complimentary. They've been, like I said, there's a woman that I work with as a volunteer at the Church History Library who explained that when she got married, she was a convert and the only one of her family that was at the wedding ceremony. And she confessed that, like, had she known she could have gotten out, she probably would have. Like, she was bewildered. And I wrote a little bit about how my mom went to the temple alone. And she was so grateful to have something that articulated first those feelings of alienation, but in a faithful way, and then gave her the tools to construct meaning from that. And this is, you know, this is someone that has dedicated their life to the gospel, you know, somebody that has spent a lifetime serving. So I think sometimes we think that people may have a rough experience or not know how to deal with something different. And then it's just a downhill slope. But I think there's a lot of folks that maybe get disoriented and just like, well, they trudge along and keep serving and keep helping other people doing what the gospel asks us to do. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for people that just go, you know, put their heads down and do the right thing. But it's also, I think we need to mitigate and limit that sort of alienation as much as possible. So,
yeah.
I've been tremendously grateful for that. There is, I think, one category of people that just have not liked it at all. And that's people that I think that tend to be more fundamentalist or like if you can go see the reviews online and there is a group of people that are like, no, like change is bad. Anything that is different is bad. We like.
Yeah. There'll always be that kind of thing.
You know, a big thesis of my book is that change is great.
Yeah. it's changed all the time. I mean, my grandfather went through before, and I think I mentioned this to you, in the 1920s. He went through before his mission, and it took all day down in Manti. All day. And when he came back, it was about 3.5 hours. And there were a lot of things that were different. He mentioned some specific ones. Yep. The most notable being, you know, the bit about Hiram and Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, there used to be a hymn. There used to be all kinds of things. My parents have told me things. And then, of course, I've been going since 1979. And there have been some pretty significant changes there, too. And while that takes some adjustment in some ways, and some of it I go, well, you know, I've read a lot on this type of thing from, you know, ancient covenant making and things. And yeah, okay, I can kind of see that. But, you know, the Lord always speaks to us in our language.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, if you want to be technical about it, should the endowment be in only English?
Mm, no. Totally.
I mean, and a lot of the changes have been to formulate translation all around the world. And with so many temples coming out, it's just phenomenal. I just see the growth and the temple work, and it just gets exciting when you think about it in those terms. Two of my really close friends are just finishing as counselors in temple presidencies. They just got released. You know, they have some great experiences, and some other good friends of mine were called to replace them in the two St. George temples. So I can't wait to hear some more of the stories, and maybe you'll have to do a follow-up volume.
I'd love it.
But speaking of that, now you took some of your experience and you've written Holiness to the Lord, and now you have two new projects that are in the works, one of them going to press. Did you tell me next week?
Yeah, it's going to the publisher next week, but they're both dropping in March, both books.
Tell us about the first one. There's two of them, and one is for Latter-day Saint audiences. Well, it's for general audiences, but it's a Latter-day Saint publisher, and then the other one is a different publisher. So tell us about both of them, if you would. I thought of having you come back on when I saw your social media announcement about it, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. So
yeah, I'm excited about both of them, and I hope we can come back. So Deseret book that will come out in March, it's called Dedicated, and it's I say it's a coffee table book, but I don't know that Latter-day Saints have coffee tables. I don't know, but it's 10x10 lay flat binding. So when you open it up, it'll be 20 inches by 10 inches, full color. And it has over 350 images. So it's a co-authored book with Matt McBride, Lisa Olson Tate, and Brittany Chapman Nash. These are the finest scholars we have. And we all work together to write about the story of the Salt Lake Temple and Temple Square. And it includes, I think it moves the needle on Latter-day Saint discourse and how we talk about the temple. But it also has these wonderful images that have never been publicly available before. So we have color images of the temple interiors from the 1940s, back before they painted the wood on like the molding. So it's like rich, like the slush room had dark brown carpet. You know, we often tend to think of temples today, which are, they're various shades of mauve, or not mauve, but of beige, you know. I think some of the newer temples are a little bit more colorful, but you have the Salt Lake Temple. And I think when it's rededicated, we have these images that are just vivid with the work that was done by the saints and then the interior decorators to make it just a completely transformative experience for the Latter-day Saints. We've got the history of the murals. We've got images of the mural studies that they prepared before they created the murals. It's a really, really powerful volume, 200 pages. I'm just stoked about it. So that'll be available.
Save your money.
Yeah, so that'll be available in every Deseret book everywhere, I would imagine. I think it's going to be a big thing. So this week was the first public tickets that were made available for the rededication. Mm-hmm. They let a million go out, and they were gone in 24 hours. I think people are excited about the temple.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm speechless every time I think about it. Now, how much in preparing for this book did you get to go into the temple to see what they were doing, or have you?
No, so I still haven't. I talked to the folks that do go regularly, but we had access to, I don't want to call it the camera roll, but they've been taking pictures inside the temple every week this whole period almost. And so we had access to those. And then we'd had access to the historical archives. So we went deep into the historical archives and recovered a bunch of images, had them scanned. Many were slides, and then extracted some of those very early color images all the way up to the 60s, 70s, through the 90s and early 2000s. So it's just really a rich, rich project.
This just sounds great.
We're not making money on this project. Yeah.
Okay. That would have made it easier to get those images approved. Or my friends who have tried to do that say it's a very time consuming process.
Yeah, it's super tricky. Holiness of the Lord has a dozen images, and it was laborious. We still have to go through the channels, but doing 350 images was a big push-up.
Okay, and then you've got another one coming out, and this is probably, it's a great opportunity with the temple being open to the public.
Yeah.
And I would think that maybe this publisher is taking advantage of that. So tell us about that, this one.
Yeah, they're not dumb. But a couple of years ago, about 18 months ago, I've been noodling for a while this idea that I had finished my book, Holiness of the Lord. It's with Oxford. It's written for scholars and like readers of, you know, Latter-day Saint history. Latter-day Saints are very sophisticated readers generally.
Yeah.
But we've got these temples that are going hundreds right now that are being built. We have this big temple dedication coming up next year, and we don't really have anything that explains what's going on to just average people. And so I talked to Matt, who we'd been working on this dedicated volume, and I chatted with him. We had such a good experience. I was like, why don't we, here's the idea, 120, 130 pages, small volume. This is my imagined audience. You know, somebody that might go to church, but couldn't tell you the difference between a Methodist and a Presbyterian necessarily, and wants to know what the heck the Mormons are building.
What's getting exciting? What's all the excitement about?
Yeah. Like, what's going on over here? And so we pitched it to a number of publishers, but Erdman hit pretty quickly. Erdman's is a Christian press, a traditionally reformed press out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. I think they've grown to be very prestigious, but they have in the past have published things that aren't so nice about our church.
I could say that.
But in recent years, there's been some rapprochement. Terrell mm-hmm. Givens has published and Grant Underwood published. I think they'd plowed the field for us. So there was a furrow to go along, but the editor was tremendously supportive, and Matt and I just sort of banged it out. And the idea was, let's take the best religious scholarship, ritual studies, liturgical studies, anthropology of religion, and try to build bridges. Like, why religious ritual at all? And then how might the experiences of Christian baptism and the way different Christians have approached that, how does that connect the dots so people can understand why we do what we do in the temple? We have vignettes that open every chapter that kind of illustrate the importance of the things we do. It walks through, again, the various ceremonies of the temple, very personal vignettes from both Matt and I, and then has sort of kind of some concluding chapters about, again, like meaning making. Like, what do scholars think about religious ritual? Because there's a lot of folks out there that just don't get it. Like, it just doesn't make sense to them.
Well, and I think that's one of the big challenges we have when we teach people about the temple. When I was in the military, I took a group of young soldiers to the temple right before Desert Storm, and they all were going off to war. And
wow.
We had a temple trip. Denver was the closest temple, and we were in the middle of Kansas. So it was a several hour drive, and we took a bus. We had this preparation class, and that was the biggest challenge. And of course, we have much better materials now than we did back in the day, but I made it a point to emphasize ritual so mm-hmm. that they would understand, look, this is not something that we deal with in our everyday life. None of my contact with religion has had anything to do with any kind of ritual whatsoever. And so I still think that that's the biggest hurdle. And a lot of times you were talking about people earlier with us just in this conversation about people who didn't really connect with the temple, but the reason is they just don't feel the ritual. And yet if a ritual doesn't have meaning, then it does become just an empty, useless husk, so to speak. And so that's the challenge, is to imbue that meaning with the ritual, including not just scholarship or people who study it, but somehow to bridge that gap and help people understand what that is.
Yeah, so I think that's exactly right. And I'm hopeful that this book is called Inside the Temple, What Latter-day Saints Do in Their Most Sacred Spaces. And so Inside the Temple, I'm hopeful that this will be the book that you could give to your neighbor in a non-threatening way, right? We're like, trying to convert you. We're just trying to explain, like, this is what's going on here, and this is how it makes sense, and this is like the religious work that it does. And hopefully they could empathize with that and appreciate it. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think it's good for that audience. I think it's also great for Latter-day Saints. and I've said this before, Latter-day Saints can be a little cagey about how we talk about the temple, because for so long, we just were told to be quiet. Then when people ask questions, we're like, weird.
It's a little bit generational too, because, I sent you a copy of the book that I wrote with my father-in-law. Yeah. Well, he just turned 90. He turns 94 in a couple of weeks. So, we self-published it about 4 years ago. Just the writing process to talk about the temple as we did, and we didn't go into details the way you do in terms mm-hmm. of, this is what really happens inside. There was always this reticence, especially on his part, not because of any blame, but just that is the way culturally. The generation handled it. And the generation before that was even more discreet. My mom, who's 92, tells me, I knew nothing. Absolutely nothing. My parents didn't say a word, and I grew up in a house where they wore garments and they went to the temple on a regular basis. And, this is back in the 30s and the 40s. And I mean, just we have a lot to overcome as we inform the public. So this is a good thing, but it is the challenge, as you point out.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful Latter-day Saints will read it and like it and say, this is how I can talk to my neighbors when they ask questions, or maybe even like my kids, this is maybe a way to connect to the temple that they might not otherwise get. So I'm hopeful about both of those projects. I think the coffee table book dedicated is going to sell a lot because it's going to be out there, Deseret Book, and people are going to go through the temple and see it and be like, this is cool. I have no idea about Ehrman's and its distribution, but I hope that it gets a fair shake out there.
Well, I think with the interest in the Salt Lake Temple worldwide, and literally worldwide, there will be some people who will be interested in, and the outlets they can get to are far different. And the outlets that they get to usually are not complimentary of Latter-day Saints.
Right.
Interpreter, is a lot of the people from the old farms. And the old farms used to spend the majority of their publications basically reviewing books and commenting on books that were what you would call anti-Mormon.
Yeah.
The foundation does a little bit of that now, but not as much. It's the articles that come out every week are much more diverse in nature, but it still is there. In fact, I was talking with Dan Peterson in an interview a month or so ago, and he said, when we were younger, it was a lot more fun to review the negative books, but now it's just the same old stuff and it's old. And we've kind of outgrown that. And so anyway, it's just kind of funny that way. But I found that I did a daily book review program for 30 years. I finally retired it last November, but I used to have fun doing an April Fool book where I just roast something. And you could have a lot of fun doing a real negative review. You could make people laugh. You could do that, but it was a lot of work. And frankly, I just got tired of it. It was like, there's so many positive, good things to talk about. We need to talk about that. So in the book, one of the things that they say in the blurb describes the sacraments practiced in the temple, a washing and anointing ceremony rooted in anciently priesthood traditions. And I presume that's where you talk about the Old Testament practices that it's kind of based on.
Yeah. And I mean, so I think that there's other scholars who are always going to do a better job, like teasing out the ancient temple and the work that's done there. And like, the ancient antecedents to like the tokens and signs and things like that. We're very much just focused on sort of like in Holiness to the Lord, there's these ancient practices of consecration for the temple priests. And just in similar ways to early Christians who incorporated elements of those consecrations into baptism, we've also incorporate elements of those into our temple experience. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to help people kind of see how those incorporations make sense. Because if you just show pictures of the temple robes, they don't make sense. Like nothing about that makes sense to anybody. But if you can sort of give that long context and draw the lines between the dots, it becomes not only comprehensible, but obvious.
So anyway, this is going to be great. So, I talked to Terrell Givens and Grant Hardy about the differences in publishing between with Oxford in the trades section like you did with your two previous books. Mm-hmm. And then Grant in particular talked about it in terms of doing it with the annotated Book of Mormon. And he said that was a completely different experience because they wanted me to talk about my belief. Yeah. It was okay to say, I'm a believing Mormon. I believe that when I face God, I will be judged by this work, which I found fascinating in a scholarly work on the Book of Mormon published by a, you know, one of the more prestigious religious presses in the world. And yeah. I'm wondering, how did you find your experience dealing with Oxford in the Trade versus Erdman's editor, where they are recognizing both of you as believers? I mean, with obviously you can't, there's a line between the proselyting element and testimonial, if you would, and then, but you also can be much more honest and open about the fact, I really do believe these things and this has meaning in a certain way.
So I think Oxford's divisions are important. So Grant published the Book of Mormon with their scripture division that deals with confessional ideas.
Specifically mentioned that there was a difference, but I appreciated him identifying what the difference was between the two divisions.
Yeah. So
and
from that,
and then you've got Erdman's, and Erdman's is a religious publisher.
For sure. So for the holiness to the Lord, I really wanted to make it more accessible, less technical. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, I had the audience, I'm going to have scholars and I'm going to have Latter-day Saints, and I'm going to try to write to both of them. And in my first drafts, the editor came back and was like, no. And my reviewers were like, you're trying to talk to two different audiences here. You should, and the feedback was, write to scholars. And this is, I think, a credit to Latter-day Saints. They said, write to scholars. Latter-day Saints will come along for the ride. And so there's not a confessional element to the holiness to the Lord. I talk about my experience as a Latter-day Saint. I'm not bearing my testimony in it or anything. I'm explaining the experience to people.
Yes.
And incorporating my experience. And they were okay with that, but they were not interested in having a Latter-day Saint audience per se. They wanted me to write two scholars. And at Erdman's, again, there is Matt and I in the beginning, in the introduction, we're like, look, we're Latter-day Saints. We've been practicing our whole lives and we saw a need. And so we wrote this book and we talk about our experiences in it. And they're like, they just loved it. Like there was no, you need to change anything. It was just like, yes.
Yeah.
We love
That's it. That's right. We appreciate the fact that you're believers. We get it.
Yep.
Go for it.
But again, we're also not proselytizing. We say that as well.
Right. Well, of course,
like this book is not about proselytizing. And I've been thinking.
It lets the subject proselyte for itself.
Yeah, for sure. I've been thinking about that. I haven't. So the dedicated book, like, again, we're not like self-consciously in the text bearing our testimonies, but it is for a Latter-day Saint audience, general mm-hmm. readership, where we can kind of make some of those conclusions about the restored gospel. And it made me want to try to do that more. Uh-huh. Like I've got some ideas about projects that maybe Deseret Book might be interested in. We'll see.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great. But still, it's fascinating to see how this grows from an arm of scholarship that we don't always see, at least for us, an interpreter. Well, you know, a lot of our stuff is, you know, more ancient scripture related, more focused on elements. There are some elements of church history, but not quite the same areas that you cover. So we appreciate you coming on and helping us learn more about it, and especially sharing your experiences with us with these different publishers. I remember talking to a scholar once who had some dealings with Oxford, and I said, isn't it great that Oxford is publishing books about Latter-day Saints, starting with By the Hand of Mormon, literally from Terrell Givens. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, Oxford likes to sell books.
Yeah, that's right.
They know that Latter-day Saints sell books. Yeah. And so while I was doing my program, I realized, you know, that's really true. When the Joseph Smith papers came out, I remember the first volume sold out almost immediately. And eventually, I think they sold something like 10,000 copies of it.
Yeah, like insane in numbers.
And a real high number. And yet, when you have the Papers of George Washington volumes, now granted, there are more of those volumes, but even so, you're lucky to get 1,000, and all of them are university libraries.
That's right.
Whereas I know several, myself included, who have the whole set, and that is what we do. And so maybe it's all the money we don't spend on alcohol and other kinds of entertainment. I don't know. But I just think this is a great opportunity. So I really want to thank you for your work on these.
Yeah, thank you.
We're certainly going to have you back when the books are published. If you'd like to come back, and
absolutely,
we'll invite you along for some other things sometime too. I want to thank you for being with us today. Thank you for your work and your effort, and thank your family as well, because obviously it takes a lot of time from your family to do something like this, but it is very important and it is appreciated. So
thank you. And thank you for all the work you're doing too. Appreciate it.
You bet. Okay. Thank you. That's it for my interview with Jonathan Stapley. And join us again soon for another episode of Interpreter Insights. This is Terry Hutchinson on behalf of Jonathan Stapley and the Interpreter Foundation. Thank you for listening.